Talk.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
And this is Larry Manti in for Geraldo Rivera. It's 10:06. The number to call in is 1-866-GERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. It is the top story today, the stubborn mystery of what happened to German Wings Flight 4U9525 over southern France. And the mystery and what we're hearing from government officials and from airline officials is at the very least troubling. Look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, never have been, so please don't read too much into what I'm about to say. But why did the U.S. government and the airline and the governments of Germany and France come out so quickly and say this isn't terrorism? Coming out and saying it was an accident. And then in the same breath say, we don't know what happened. That bothers me. If you don't know what happened, why come out so quickly and eliminate the possibility of terrorism? I'm certainly not saying that's what happened. And I get that it may be low. I don't know, but it may be low on the list of possibilities. But given what has happened in the world, what's happening in the world right now in Yemen and the Middle East and in Iraq, and given what has happened in Europe with the recent attacks, it certainly is possible. And so if you have no idea what happened, why come out and discount the possibility? 1-866-GERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. I know this has crossed your mind. I know you don't want to believe that's what happened. And maybe everybody came out and said it's not terrorism just to make certain they didn't scare us all. But it's a big evil world out there, and we have to confront evil. So don't say it's not a possibility. What is clear today, 24 hours later, after the accident, is that almost all of the information we got yesterday morning was wrong, was inaccurate. Here are some things that, again, at the very least, are troubling in this story. Things we know now 24 hours later. First, this kind of crash just doesn't happen. Hasn't happened for a long time. And in the history of crashes, the vast majority of crashes, over 90% happen on takeoff and descent. Not when you hit a cruising altitude. The plane was in the air for a half an hour after taking off from Barcelona. The plane was cruising at 38,000 feet when it started to go down. There was no mayday call. Yesterday morning, we were told there was a distress call. There was no mayday call. Usually, when there is some kind of problem, the pilot lets a nearby tower know about it immediately. Was the pilot not able to make such a call? It just didn't happen, and aviation officials at this point can't figure out why. In fact, right after the airline reached its cruising height of 38,000 feet, the tower lost radio contact at 10:30 a.m. in France. That is highly unusual. The plane then, for some reason, and again, nobody knows why, started dropping rapidly. But aviation officials are calling it a controlled descent, meaning they believe someone or something was controlling the plane. Even though it dropped 14,000 feet in 6 minutes, either someone was behind the controls or autopilot took over for some reason. They couldn't regain control from autopilot. But even that doesn't make sense. So, because why would it start descending if it was on autopilot? And the descent just kept happening, as if it was a malfunction of the plane and the pilot could not pull out of it, or didn't attempt to pull out of it, or couldn't pull out of it, All this is to say is that this is at least highly unusual. And here's one last thing. The owner of a French camping ground near the crash site says he heard a series of loud noises in the air before the German Wings plane hit the ground. Pierre Polizzi says there's a whole lot of military planes in the area flying overhead. He's used to that. And so he looked and he didn't see any military planes. And then he said the sounds were unusual. He said fighter jets make a quick sound as they go by, and these sounds were long. The first one was 8 seconds, he guessed. And then he heard another long sound about 30 seconds later. So what does all this information together mean? Not much. Individually, they are pieces of a difficult puzzle. But when on earth does the airline, the French government, the U.S. government, and others come out so quickly and say it's not terrorism? They don't know. Is it inconceivable that someone took control of the flight and crashed the plane? Gee, that never happens. Again, I'm not saying it did, but it's just strange to me that since officials have no idea what happened, that they would discount the possibility so quickly. 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. Tommy in Manhattan, you're on 77 WABC. Hi. Hello? Tommy, you're on the air.
Okay, you hear me?
Yep, I hear you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, that's their knee-jerk reaction, because even if it is terrorism, they wouldn't do anything about it, and I'll tell you why. They're so terrified of the Muslim population in Europe that all you have to do is take a minute. It's a video. It's only a minute on YouTube. It's called Muslims on a Bus in France. And when you see that, you'll see why they're so scared of them, and you'll see why all the Jews are running out of France today. You know, that, it's a 45-second video. It's called Muslims on a Bus in France. That's their knee-jerk reaction to the plane. They are absolutely terrified of the Muslims in Europe.
Yeah, but, you know, Tommy, yeah, I get it, and you got your plug-in for the video and whatever cause you have, but I'm not saying it is terrorism, but I'm just saying that my flag goes up. My awareness goes up when somebody discounts something so quickly when you know they have no idea. So there has to be a reason for that. There has to be a reason that we don't know about. Either they have more information than they're letting go, which would be despicable. They don't want to scare people, and so they lied to us, which would be despicable. Or they're covering something else up, which would be despicable. Either way, it's wrong to say this without saying, and here's why. You can't just claim it's an accident and it's not a terrorist attack and then not give a reason for that. 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. Because all the information so far at least leads to that possibility. And again, it's a possibility.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
This is Larry Menti in today for Geraldo Rivera. The number to call in is 1-866-Geraldo, 1-866-437-2536. We should find out soon, or we may find out soon, I should say, what happened on that doomed flight, the German Wings flight that crashed yesterday in southern France, killing all 150 people on board. Right now, it is a mystery, but French officials have a badly damaged black box that they're trying to repair for information. There are two things investigators will be looking at: the voice recorder that records four microphones in the cockpit. French officials have that, but it's badly damaged, and again, they're trying to mine it for information. That's going to tell us a lot. Like, were the pilots even conscious, or did they have control of the plane? And the flight data recorder that captures 25 hours worth of information and the condition of every major part of the plane, so it can tell us if there was a mechanical failure, that has not been retrieved. They're still looking for that. But if officials cannot retrieve information from the voice recorder and the data recorder is destroyed, How are they willing to so quickly discount the possibility of terrorism, like our government seems to be doing? 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. Rich from White Plains, you're on 77 WABC.
How are you, Larry?
I'm doing well, Rich. How are you?
Okay, there's something that I don't understand, and it's not just about this one particular. It seems to be every incident where an airline crashes. I mean, I can pick up a cell phone, and I could talk to somebody halfway across the world, but there isn't anybody on the cockpit at the moment of a crisis that can go to a secure channel and radio somebody about what's happening. I don't understand why that's, you know, you would think that we're back in the days of Marconi, explain that to me.
What's
happening? The pilot has to pilot the plane, I understand. There should be a designee that to be able to communicate immediately what's happening to the airplane.
Unless they're all unconscious or incapacitated.
I guess so, but hey, Larry, how many times have we seen this now? It's every time. We had the Malaysian one, where we heard the guy, the last thing he said was, what was it again? We heard a fragment of the last thing he said. I mean, that's the closest we got to any details about what was happening in one of these crashes, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of people, thanks for the call, Rich, a lot of people are saying now, especially if you go to these message boards where aviators and airline pilots get on, a lot of them are saying that they believe, because of the way this happened, that the pilots and the pilot and the co-pilot, that everybody in the cockpit was incapacitated somehow. They believe maybe somehow there was a crack in the windshield or that it was equipment failure. But then how do you explain the controlled descent after that, unless does the plane take over? I don't know the answer to that, but what's a controlled descent at that point? I mean, they made it sound like somebody was trying to pull out of this. Again, this all plays into the mystery. I'm supposing, just like everybody else, but I'm not discounting the possibility, like the airline seems to be doing it and all the government seem to be doing, that this could have been terrorism. I know it's low on the list, but my suspicions are raised when they so quickly discount that. Luvo in New Jersey, you're on 77 WABC.
Yes, this is Lubo. I completely agree with the theory of terrorism, but also I am missing the pictures and the name of the pilot. Isn't that the first thing what the airline posted? Who are the pilots? What is their background? I mean, it's weird to me. I am looking through it, digging into it, and I just really could not find it.
Yeah, Lubo, you know, weird. I saw what you were going to talk about, and I thought that was fascinating. Thanks for the call, by the way. I thought that was fascinating, and I started looking myself, and I couldn't find it. And so that is interesting. But it's just another piece in this puzzle. It's just another piece in this mystery. And it's another reason why it's so suspicious that everybody's saying it's not terrorism without giving a reason. Patricia from New York, you're on 77 WABC.
Hi, Larry. Good morning.
Morning, Patricia.
They did report that there had been some repairs which delayed the plane for about an hour on the ground. It had to do with the door to the nose of the plane, the landing gear nose. And the fact that the pilots, subsequent to that, refused to fly tells me that my impression is it's not terrorism. So if they had a mechanical event at 38,000 feet, which the pilots, you know, got distracted, maybe they wanted to address it as quickly as possible. It only takes a minute or two to depressurize a cabin and render everybody unconscious to begin with. So you have the Alps of the altitude there are usually somewhere around 12,000 feet. You know, so what people think they hear on the ground, it can be a complete distortion in terms of what actually happened.
Yeah, but Patricia, I get that. And I've been reading these boards with the pilots all talking about this, and they also think that maybe the windshield cracked. They think that somehow, you're right, that the pilot and the co-pilot and everybody in the cockpit was knocked out somehow, and that's how this happened. And whether it was the mechanical failure that you're talking about, which was a door in the loading area. But still, you don't know. I mean, they keep coming out and saying, we don't know yet. So just say you don't know. Why you specifically want to come out and say it's not terrorism, that's odd to me. That's a little bit troubling to me. 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. Brian from New Jersey, you're on 77 WABC.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Hi, Brian.
I'm calling because they always say that it's not terrorism. It's the first thing they say. And they did it when the two soldiers were killed up in Canada at the War Memorial and at the Parliament Building. They either say it's not terrorism or it's not linked to any terrorist organization. They use terms like lone wolf attacks. It's the first thing they go to.
And why do you think that is, Brian?
Well, the motivation's debatable. I think it's just to keep people, I don't know. I don't want to be conspiratorial, but it seems that the government's just trying to promote friendly Islamic tones.
I also think, Brian, they want to be able to say that we've combated terrorism and we're keeping everything safe. And so there's nothing to see here. But we've defeated terrorism. We have them at bay. We have them on the run. And then every time there's an attack like there was in Paris or there is in Belgium or there was in Canada or there was down in Texas at Fort Hood, that dispels their narrative. And I'm not sure that's the reason for this. Maybe they know something they're not telling us, but they should tell us. When we get back, I want to start talking about this police officer and this tragedy in Linden, New Jersey. This is Larry Mente in for Geraldo Rivera today. The number to call in, 1-866-GERALDO on 77 WABC.
On the air, online, and on iHeart.com. We are 77 WABC. The headlines, the city's most pressing issues. Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
And it's now 10:36, coming up on 10:37 on 77 WABC. This is Larry Mente. I'm in today for Geraldo Rivera. The number to call is 1-866-GERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. The story about the Linden, New Jersey cops who were out partying and then ended up getting in a fatal car crash bothers me for so many reasons. Let's start with how the police department, knowing Pedro Abad's history, first, let him continue on the street and on as a cop, let him drive squad cars, but didn't do their job and police him and get him off the streets and keep us all safe. He had two DUIs, 8 traffic accidents, and he was 28 years old. Look, I'm nothing but pro-cop, but my biggest problem with police departments across the country, and especially in small towns like Linden, New Jersey, is that they don't police themselves. And until they start doing that, they will continue to have to deal with the damage that it's done to all men and women in blue by bad cops or cops with problems, cops that everybody knows has a problem, whether it's drugs or alcohol or anger issues, racism, whatever. The police must first police themselves. 1-866-GERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. I'd especially like to hear from cops, former cops, because I know you know this is a problem. I know it's difficult to do. I know it's difficult to say, hey, my brother or my sister over there has got a real problem and should be off the streets. But not only did the cops in Linden not say this guy's got a problem, and it's, from everything you read, he had a serious problem, but they went out partying with him and let him drive home, putting themselves in jeopardy and putting others in jeopardy. Here's the story. Abad and some friends went to Curve's Gentlemen's Club in Staten Island, New Jersey. And after a night of drinking, and we know that from the Instagram photos, Abad was behind the wheel driving the wrong way on the West Shore Expressway and hit a big rig head on. There were 3 Linden, New Jersey cops in the car. Abad and his partner, Patrick Kudiak, are both right now in critical condition. They've already gone and taken blood from Abad to find out if he was intoxicated, and he might have some charges coming against him from New York City police. another Linden police officer, Frank Vigiano, and a friend who was not a cop, Joseph Rodriguez, were killed in the crash. But let's focus on Abad, the driver who I said is 28 years old. 28, and he has two DUIs and 8 traffic accidents in his history. His license was suspended back in 2013 for DUI. He just recently got it back, and they had a mechanism on his car where he couldn't start it unless he was sober, and that was recently taken off, and he had an accident since then. If that were you or me, would the police allow you to keep driving? How about the insurance companies? But the Linden police let him stay on despite his history. Had the department really cracked down on him, had the fellow men in blue did an intervention, they may have saved lives and prevented an awful tragedy. This officer lives with his parents in Linden, and neighbors say, according to the newspapers, he regularly stumbled out of his car and recently wrecked a BMW right after he got his license back last year. And his cop buddies in the department don't know about this problem. The problem that the neighbors plainly see? Of course they knew. They had to. At that point, their job is to protect the rest of the department, to protect the public, and police their own. 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. I love and appreciate the police. You've heard me defend them over and over again. But as we look at policing in America, based on what happened, you'll know, in Ferguson and what happened in other police incidents across the country and with Eric Garner in Staten Island, the biggest problem I see with police and police departments is they protect bad cops or cops with a problem like Abad had. Incident after incident, tragedy after tragedy like this head-on crash that killed two in Staten Island on Tuesday, there's a long list of warning signs and past incidents that go either unreported or underdisciplined, and cops know. They know and they protect their own at the risk of not protecting us. And until that changes, there's always going to be problems. 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. And here's the bigger problem among the rank and file. The brave cops who do step forward, and cops out there listening know this, the ones that do step forward and say something, hey, Officer Abad has a problem. He should be off the street until we can get him fixed up, until we can get him cleaned up. That officer gets ostracized. He or she becomes the bad cop. He or she becomes the snitch. Cops so bad want community members to come forward and give up criminals or bad seeds. Yeah, we'll lead by example. When you sign up to serve and protect, that means protecting us from cops that could do us harm. Frank in Rockland County, you're on 77 WABC.
Hi, Larry. It's Ralph. It's Ralph in Manhattan.
Oh, hey, Ralph.
Good. Those of us who don't own a badge, it's hard for us to speak out because we're immediately labeled cop haters. I can emphasize, I love the good cops, hate the bad cops. And the blue wall of silence that you speak about, I term it that way. If a cop rats, and they call it ratting, if they rat on their fellow officer, well, they're ostracized at the precinct. They can't go to work. They can't be comfortable around their buddies. And that's the problem with any organization, but this specifically so powerful and has so much clout, they have to police, if you don't mind the term, they have to police themselves, Larry. And that's a difficult thing to ask any force of any nature to do.
Yeah, and there's a problem. There's an inherent problem with that. It's like doctors who have to police themselves or attorneys who have to police themselves. There's the same problem there, but here you are sworn. Your sworn duty is to serve and protect.
Don't you think we have to reward, for lack of a better term, the cop that comes out against all of this backlash and has the courage, the guts to say, hey, this guy is putting the whole public in jeopardy. I'm going to take the high road. I'm going to report him. I don't care about the ramifications. We have to reward that guy.
Yeah, Ralph, you're absolutely right. And that cop would be a hero, and we need to see them as a hero, and yet it still doesn't happen because it's a difficult thing to do. But isn't that the definition of courage? And isn't that what we expect from the police department and the men and women in blue to have that courage to protect us, even when it's a cop they're protecting us from? 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. We got some former cops and current cops calling in. Their phone calls next on 77 WABC.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story. For New York, live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
It is 10:52 now, 8 minutes before 11 o'clock on 77 WABC. This is Larry Menti in for Geraldo Rivera today. The number to call in is 1-866-Geraldo, 1-866-437-2536. And we're talking about this horrible tragedy, a police officer, Linden, New Jersey police officer, Pedro Abad, who was behind the wheel driving on the wrong side of the road, coming back from a strip club and hits a big rig head on. He was in Staten Island at Curve's Gentleman's Club. Two people in the car died, including another Linden police officer, Joseph Rodriguez. Abad is in critical condition right now, and New York City police have already taken his blood to find out if he was intoxicated. Now, he has two previous DUIs. He had his license taken away. He had 8 traffic accidents. And so my question is, first of all, why was he allowed to drive that night by his buddies, the 3 in the car? 2 of them were police officers. And more importantly, why didn't police officers in Linden step forward and say, hey, this guy's got a problem and shouldn't be out there on the road, and we've got to fix this? One of the problems with policing in America, and I know it has come to the forefront, is that cops don't turn in bad cops. Cops don't turn in cops that shouldn't be out on the street. Cops don't turn in cops with problems. This blue wall of silence has to stop, or all police and all of society is harmed by it. And this is just one tragic example of that. I'd love to hear from people from Linden, from former police officers and current police officers, at 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. Chantel from Irvington, New Jersey. You're on 77 WABC.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Well, this is my opinion. Unfortunately, it's a lose-lose situation because, first of all, you have fellow officers. How can you rat out your fellow police officer when you're doing the same thing? Secondly, the backlash that can come from it. You know, what if they find out that you ratted them out? You know, their jobs could be at jeopardy. Their lives can be in jeopardy, you know. It's an undercover situation of corruption with a lot of our police officers, no matter their race.
Yeah, no, I think, Chantel, I think you're right, and I think it's the number one problem in policing right now. We keep talking about all the other problems and the problems of racism, and I think this is the biggest problem in that, because who's going to know better about the police officers and the problems among the rank and file than other members of the rank and file. And I get that it's a difficult thing to do. But don't we expect that from our police officers? I mean, they want so much for community members to snitch on criminals, and yet they won't step forward and say, hey, there's somebody here that has a problem. There's a cop among us that has anger management problems. There's a cop among us that's a racist. There's a cop among us that has drug problems or alcohol problems and shouldn't be out in the road until he or she gets fixed. We expect our police officers to be heroes, and isn't that the definition of heroism? To have courage in the face of unpopularity, in the face of danger? I mean, once we fix that problem, I think we can fix policing. I want to stay on this topic and expand it a little bit, especially leading into Curtis and Kubi, because I know they're picking up on this. This is Larry Menti on 77 WABC. I'm in today for Geraldo Rivera.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
And it's now 11:05 on 77 WABC. This is Larry Menti in for Geraldo Rivera today. The number to call in anytime is 1-866-GERALDO. 1-866-437-2536. We're talking about the tragedy in Staten Island. A head-on collision on the West Shore Expressway. Linden, New Jersey police officer Pedro Abad behind the wheel, driving on the wrong side of the road with two other Linden, New Jersey cops and a friend in the car after they had been partying at a strip club, and he hits a big rig head-on. The officer and friends showed pictures of themselves drinking on Instagram that night. Two people in the car died, including Linden police officer Joseph Rodriguez. Two, including Pedro Abad, are in critical condition. Now, according to NJ.com, Abad has two DUIs in his history and eight car accidents and was just coming off a suspended license. I get that the whole incident is tragic, but you have to question why the Linden Police Department didn't step in and control Officer Abad, deal with his problem, why the other officers around him didn't say, hey, this guy's got a problem. That blue wall of silence on all problems within a police department has to end. They must have known. 1-866-GERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. Cops not being able to turn in bad cops and cops with problems, I think, is the number one problem in police departments nowadays. If they could police themselves, we'd all be better off. And the police departments would be better off. And maybe Pedro Abad wouldn't be in the hospital. And maybe Officer Rodriguez would not have died. But let me expand this conversation with another angle. The flags at the police stations in Linden and City Hall are flying half-staff in honor of Officer Rodriguez and the other officers in critical condition. My good friend Curtis Sliwa, who's coming up at noon with Ron Kubi, he's got a real problem with the flags at half-staff because of how Officer Rodriguez died. Curtis believes such an honor should be reserved for those who die, well, let's just say, under different circumstances, not who die after a night of partying and driving the wrong way on a highway and putting others' lives in danger, not drinking at a strip club. 1-866-GERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. Now, I don't have the same problem with the flags at half-staff. I get it. But a tragedy is a tragedy, and a police officer is dead, and I know the Linden police are mourning. But to me, it does expose a culture that I do have a problem with. and is much more dangerous than the symbolism of the flags at half-staff. And that is the blue line of protection, the learned behavior inside a police force for cops to look the other way when one of their own has a problem and could be dangerous to society. The fact that police don't police themselves. To ignore an obvious danger that could put those they are sworn to serve and protect in jeopardy. This is a culture prevalent in Linden, in New York, in police departments across the country. And as policing has risen to the top of the food chain of national issues, that, I believe, is problem number one. 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. George in New York, you're on 77 WABC.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, George.
Well, I agree with you in terms of the police culture, but I disagree with you in terms of the officers themselves. They were not on duty when this occurred. In all probability, he missed the right turn, so he got onto the highway going the wrong direction, not knowing that. Maybe he was intoxicated, maybe he wasn't. In all probability, he had been drinking. But that doesn't mean he was drunk at the time. I mean, if you're on the wrong side of a highway, I've spent a lot of time in Staten Island, and it's very easy to get on the wrong side of the highway at that point where he got on.
Yeah, George, you know, I take your point. Let me just stay there.
My uncle was a police captain in New York City. I was an instructor of police community relations for the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration. So I taught at the 7-9 precinct here in New York and also out in Suffolk County.
Okay.
In Huntington. My experience has been the most cops are incredibly dedicated to their jobs. They take their life in their hands every minute they're on the job. They don't know who they're going to encounter. The only friends they have are the other cops. And they see the society as the enemy. I hate to say that, but that's the way it is, particularly with white cops from working class families. If they've had any experience with kids that are drug addicted or sociopathic or psychopathic, as many young kids are, whether they're black or white, doesn't make a difference.
George, I'm going to stop you for 1 second because I want to take a couple of points that you brought up. I'm going to keep you on because this is fascinating, and thank you for calling in, especially with your background. But when you talked about Officer Abad in particular, Lou,
he was a bad cop. He wasn't a bad cop.
I'm not saying he's a bad. No. I didn't say he was a bad cop. I said he was a cop with a problem, and he had eight accidents and two DUIs. So he seemed to have a drinking problem, and it's been reported that when he gets home many times by his neighbors, he stumbles into his parents' house. So it seems like he has a history of problems, and his friends had to know that. The other cops would have to know that, would they not?
Well, maybe not. I mean, if he had the
two
problem,
DUIs.
He probably didn't have it on the job.
He had his license taken away.
You know, the police station, intoxicated or high, they'd kick him out. So his problem was not.
Wait a second. George,
the police department is probably the only place that he was together.
Yeah, you don't know that.
His parents.
You don't know that.
He's got an addictive personality.
You're assuming something you don't know, George. You're protecting a police officer. You're doing the same thing. You don't know that. Look, I don't know it. You're right. I don't know it. But you don't know that.
We know that most police officers are incredibly dedicated to their jobs. Now, this guy may have a problem. He may have had accidents. He may have, in fact, had DUI, but they probably had little or nothing to do with his work as a police officer. They're two different lives. He has a life of his own at home. He's not married. Living with his parents, that's a little suspicious right away. You know, you're wondering what this guy's psychological makeup is. Well, the only life he has, really, is the life he has with his officers. They may or may not be aware of, quote, his problem.
Two of the cops were out drinking with him.
Drinking with his friends and got on the wrong side of the highway. And, yes, he probably does have a problem. But that problem is probably not aware to his fellow officers. He lives a different life when he's in the police department.
They were out at a strip club drinking with him, George. They were out at a strip club drinking with him. They had to know. The department had to know that he had two DUIs. The department had to know that he had his license taken away from him. It's hard for me to believe. It stretches the foundation of credibility to believe that his brothers, that his department didn't know he had a problem and didn't step in.
Good luck, Jerry. Be careful.
All right. Thanks a lot, George. Yeah, no, I will be careful. In fact, you know, it's strange, George, that you did call in and say that you agreed. And look, I agree with you. I agree with you that most cops don't have these problems. And I agree with you that most cops, all cops, are willing to put their lives on the line for me and you. I agree with that. And I think that there are some cops, and not necessarily Abbott, although it's happened now, give other cops a bad name. And if they were more likely to protect us from bad cops and cops that have a problem, there'd be a better public image about police officers. They'd get the public image they deserve as being our heroes. So, George, we agree on more, and police officers out there, we agree on more than we disagree. But there is a problem in that there are some bad cops, very few, maybe 1, 2%, maybe 5% at the most, at the very most. But if you can't weed them out yourselves, if you can't police police departments, then you've got a big problem, and society has a big problem, and this problem will continue and be exacerbated by your silence. And I think that if they did know that this Linden, New Jersey police officer had a real problem and they did nothing about it, they did him a disservice and everybody in the public a disservice. 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. Your phone call next on 77 WABC.
Live, local, on it, 866-HERALDO, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
It is now 11:23 on 77 WABC, and this is Larry Menti in for Geraldo Rivera, and all I have to say is, wow. You know, I know it's a tragedy. I know it's a tragedy, this police officer, these two men killed, that were just passengers in the car after being out. Three of the people in the car were Linden, New Jersey police officers. They were out partying at a strip club in Staten Island and in the highway on the way home. They crash into two tractor trailers after going the wrong way on the highway. It is a tragedy. I get it. They were all in their 20s, their late 20s. The driver, Pedro Abbott, a Linden, New Jersey police officer, had just got his license back from a DUI. He had two DUIs on his record. He was known in the neighborhood of stumbling out of his car after drinking, and he had eight car accidents at the age of 27. And so I know it's a tragedy, but it's at times like this when we have to ask the question. How did the other police officers in Linden, New Jersey, not see this guy had a problem? After a night of drinking, and they Instagram pictures of themselves drinking at the strip club, after a night of drinking, how did they allow this guy to get behind the wheel? It is a blue line of silence when you have a cop with a problem and or a bad cop that other police officers don't turn him in, don't say, hey, this guy's got a problem. Their mission is to protect and serve us by policing yourselves. 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. And I get a call from a guy like George, who is a former cop and is from a family of cops, who defends this guy. Starts off by saying, yeah, you know what? You're right. We have to do a better job of policing ourselves. But this guy was okay. Robert from Middletown, New York. You're on 77 WABC.
Hi. The last caller that was on it was he just outed himself as a systematic problem.
Right, and because he wouldn't say. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're exactly right, Robert. I was just talking about it. He was a guy that called up and couldn't bring himself as a policeman to say, this guy is a problem.
And it goes deeper in, and I don't want to get off subject here, but it goes as far back as coaches on the field with children in sports, and you see a kid that's over-aggressive and just really, and they go, oh, no, he's just really competitive. No, let's flag that.
Yeah, that is a little off topic. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, it goes to everything that guy was defending. You can't tell me somebody in his life didn't know he had a problem, and somebody needs to step up and say, dude, listen, get help. Listen, you can't do this. Listen. You know, live by the same rule that most of us should live by. Like, if you're doing something that you don't want to see yourself on the front page of the paper the next day, you should stop doing it.
Yeah, Robert, thanks a lot for the phone call. I think you're exactly right. And you have to go. Maybe you have to go to the officers in charge. Maybe you have to go to the captain or the chief and say, hey, this guy's got a real problem and he should get some help. Or this guy's got a real anger management issue and he might be a danger outside. I do believe it's the number one problem in policing today, the fact that police won't police themselves. Paul from Staten Island, you're in 77 WABC.
Yeah, Larry, listen, I have a couple of thoughts on this. I'm not an officer of the law. I said I was from Staten Island. I believe, and I don't know how prevalent it is today, but, and I know officers, and I know over the years, I'm not a youngster, I'm almost 60 years old, that they get kind of a pass.
Oh, they give themselves a pass.
I mean, no, but the thought is, I have a badge. This is what I believe. Not 100%, but there's a percentage. There's always a percentage that will feel like they'll get away with it. They'll show their badge, and they'll be on their way. Just like when they get just pulled over for speeding or whatever traffic violation, they show their badge, and they drive away. And I spent a lot of time on the road. I've seen it. But my main thing here, my main point is we have three officers and a civilian. I think the youngest was 23. There was a 27-year-old, I believe.
Yeah, 27-year-old driving.
Two 28-year-olds. These are adults. What happened to the designated driver idea?
Or why would you let, thanks a lot for the phone call, Paul, why would you let a guy that has two DUIs in his past, and you must know that, and seems to have, at least from reports, seems to have a drinking problem, and has a bad driving record, 8 accidents, and he's 27 years old. Why allow him to drive? I get that it might have been his car. It was a Civic. But at that point, he's probably the worst guy to be driving home. And he stopped and he got gas, and the guy at the gas station said he watched him drive up under the service road and go the wrong way. And he said there were signs all over the place. He didn't know how he could miss those signs. So, look, police have to start policing police. And police want people to come forward and snitch in the neighborhoods. Well, they have to be able to tell on each other. I want to change up topic when we come back after the news, because there is a right to die bill making its way through the legislature in New Jersey. It would be the first state in the area. Does Chris Christie sign it? He's got a problem. This is Larry Menti in for Geraldo Rivera on 77 WABC. And this is Larry Menti in for Geraldo Rivera, coming to you live from the NJDiet.com studio. The time right now is 11:37. The number to call in is 1-866-GERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. It looks like New Jersey could soon join a handful of states across the country to pass a right-to-die bill. Some call it assisted suicide. Some call it death with dignity. It doesn't matter what euphemism you use. It is becoming less and less controversial, according to public opinion polls that show over 60% of the people across the country are for the bills and for the laws. One of the groups vehemently against it is the Catholic Church, for moral reasons. Now, I'm Catholic. I understand the church's position, because they believe no matter what, the taking of a pill to end your own life is suicide, no matter the circumstances. Again, I'm Catholic. I disagree with my own church. I've seen too many suffer. Too many families suffer unnecessarily as they await in pain an inevitable conclusion. And death at that point, when there is no alternative, is merciful and compassionate. 1-866-ERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. Five states have passed right-to-die bills. Oregon, Washington, Montana, New Mexico, and Vermont, so there's nobody in the area unless you want to include Vermont, and that's quite a drive. Many more are considering such a bill. I know there's a bill right now in California, and it benefits really only a handful of people. For instance, Oregon was the first state, and every year they hand out, they prescribe about 100 of the pills that allow someone to take their own life. Interestingly enough, even after getting the pill and going through a long process to get the pill, even though the people know they're going to die or at least have been told they only have a few months to live, 70% actually take the pill. Over 30% don't want to do it, and I'm not sure I could do it. I think you have to be at the point where you have no hope, and I can't see myself ever losing complete hope. I would be praying every moment for a miracle and believing that a miracle might happen. 1-866, and thinking I might miss that miracle if I take the pill. 1-866-ERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. Now, this would be a big deal for the New York area because, for instance, after Oregon passed the bill, people with terminal illnesses would move there to die. There was the famous story of Brittany Morgan, who was 29 years old and just got married, a young, beautiful woman who was diagnosed with cancer and told she was going to die. And she's maybe the most famous case because she videotaped everything she went through, and she moved to Oregon with her new husband to take her own life. The New Jersey Assembly has passed the bill, and it's now in the Senate. There are a lot of precautions in the bill and in all of the right-to-die bills and laws across the state. First, you have to be diagnosed with having only 6 months to live. Two doctors have to sign off on this. You must be mentally competent to ask for the pill that will kill you. So Alzheimer's patients would not be able to get the pill, and that's one of the problems that a lot of people have with it. You need to put your request in writing and then twice orally. The written request would have to be witnessed by two people. One of them cannot be a relative and cannot profit from the death in any way, and they can't work at the health care facility that's treating you as a patient. The patient would have to wait 15 days after the first oral request and then make a second oral request directly to the doctor. And then the doctor would prescribe the life-ending prescription, and the patient would have to take it themselves. No one can give it to them. And finally, for insurance reasons, the cause of death would be listed as the terminal illness and not the life-ending medication, or suicide. Again, there are so many gates, and because it really affects only a handful of people, and you have to be able to prove you're going to die, I am for the right to die bill. And I know there's people out there listening who have grappled with this and may be grappling with this right now, who don't feel like they should have to go through the pain, put their family through the pain. And shouldn't they be allowed to make that choice legally? If the only other choice is months of excruciating or over-medicated existence, 1-866-ERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. And here's an interesting question, a political question in this, which really is a moral question, and a life-and-death question. Chris Christie's running for president, and conservatives do not like this bill for moral reasons. Does Chris Christie sign it, even if it makes it through the Assembly and the Senate? It's already made it through the Assembly. It's expected to make it through the Senate. Can he sign that bill and have any chance for the Republican nomination? Ferris from Fairfield, New Jersey. You're on 77 WABC. We're from Fairfield. Excuse me.
Hello, Larry?
Yeah, Ferris, you're on the air.
Yeah, Ferris Fluke here from Fairfield. Connecticut is also going through the same legislation. The answer to your question, though, is hell no. He doesn't sign it. He can't sign it because that would be his suicide. But when you say it doesn't matter what euphemism you use for this, you're exactly wrong, because the euphemism that should be attached to this is the right to reincarnation, and thereby the fascists who support the right to die.
Yeah, Ferris, you're going somewhere that I just don't want to go right now. Selma from Queens, you're in 77 WABC. Hey, Selma, you're on the air.
Yeah, listen, how would, if you're religious, how would God expiate your sin if you believe, you know, the retribution is because of your sin? However, having said that, let's think in today's terms. The insurance carrier will get off. I mean, now they don't have to take care of you to the kilt and pay all that money to take care of business.
No, they would still Selma, they would still have to pay the money.
Would have to pay the money, but not as long. For instance, if you're going to live another 6 months, they don't have to come to business with that. You know, have to pay money. They have to pay for the services that you're going to receive. So from that point
you're saying, well, one insurance company's benefits and one doesn't benefit. But I don't, you know, I'm not sure.
Selma, that doesn't play into it. I understand that because I'm a nurse.
Yeah.
I understand this pain. But it, like I said, if you're thinking in religious terms, don't do it. Now, if you're thinking about, you know, it's so much pain you can't bear it. I mean, ultimately, it's a personal thing. I personally wouldn't do it.
Yeah, no, I don't think I could do it either. But some people that can't live through the pain or don't want to put their family through the pain and want to make that choice, you know, if they really are going to die anyway and two doctors sign off on that, then why not? Martha from New Jersey, you're on 77 WABC.
Hi, Larry. I feel very strongly about this issue. I also am a Roman Catholic, and Catholicism aside, you're going down a moral slippery slope here. We've reached a point in our civilization where life is fungible, and that is not good. It's far more merciful to speak up and act justly and state when something is wrong. And in this case, it is wrong. You're going to have people making decisions, family members, let's say, even if there are written provisions, where, let's say they have a developmentally disabled, Down syndrome, whatever, depressed, somebody who's mentally ill, who in a fit of heart-wrenching depression says, I want to end it all, okay? Well,
but if they're Martha, the important thing in what you're saying there is the person has to be terminally ill, and they have to have 6 months to live, and that has to be checked by two doctors, and their mental illness also has to be checked, and if they don't have the capacity to say it on their own and to put it in writing on their own, a family member cannot do it for them. So all of the things you talked about have been dealt with in the bill. And you're right. If those things weren't dealt with, I would agree with you. But they are. And so this is for a small number of people who have to get over those hurdles before they could be given the right to die. And I've talked to too many people who have been going through excruciating pain and just have withered away. And so allowing them to die is the merciful thing to do at that point. And I get the moral objection. I understand it. But I think there's morality on the other side as well. 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. We'll continue our discussion on the right to die bill making its way to the governor's desk in New Jersey. When we come back, this is Larry Menti in for Geraldo Rivera today on 77 WABC.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
This is Larry Menti in for Geraldo Rivera. The time right now is 11:54, 6 minutes before the top of the hour. The number to call in is 1-866-Geraldo, 1-866-437-2536. As always, I'm coming to you live from the NJDiet.com studio. The name of the bill that it's making its way through the legislature in New Jersey is officially called the Aid in Dying to the Terminally Ill Act. And it's made it through the Assembly already. A similar bill is making its way through the Senate. And it'll be interesting to see if Chris Christie signs it. But there are many gates you have to go through. You have to... Two doctors have to say that you only have 6 months to live. And then you have to put a request in for a prescription, both in writing and orally. And then 15 days later, you have to say to the doctor again, before he prescribes this pill to you to take to end your own life. And even then, it's your choice. You have to take it yourself. No one can give it to you. And for insurance purposes, it is not put down on the death certificate as a suicide, but whatever the terminal illness was. 1-866-HERALDO, 1-866-437-2536. I'm all for this bill. And New Jersey, if the governor signs it, would be the sixth state in the union to have such a bill giving people with terminal illnesses the right to die. Jake from Rockland, Connecticut. Connecticut's looking at a similar bill.
It's Rockland County, New York.
Oh, it says CT. I thought, you know, I figured it was Rockland County, but it said CT, and that's short for Connecticut. So I apologize,
okay.
Jake.
Okay, all I wanted to say is I know I only have a couple of seconds to say what I want to say. I'm not one to judge anybody that's going through a terminal illness like that. All I can say is my brother, when he was 28 days old, two doctors at minimum gave him 72 hours left to live and wanted to pull the plugs. And my parents had to make that gruesome decision not to have the plugs pulled. And they had to force the doctors to go back in and surgically correct what needed to be corrected in order to continue living. And they said that even with the surgery, he will only have 6 months left to live. And he just celebrated his fifth birthday.
Oh.
And he is the cutest thing alive. He went on, he spoke at 4 years old. He spoke at a conference in front of 200 doctors. And the point of the conference was that doctors should never be the one to decide on people's lives, whether they die, but only whether they should live.
That's wonderful, Jake. And you know what? That wouldn't apply under this law. Thanks for the phone call, Jake, and I'm so glad about your brother. It wouldn't apply under this law because a family member can't make that decision. It has to be an adult over 18, and they have to be told by two doctors that they only have 6 months to live. But you know what I think of? Valerie Harper. Remember Rhoda? She was given 6 months to live. She even did a farewell tour. She's still alive today. So it has to be your own decision, and you have to know in your heart. And maybe therein lies the problem. We'll talk about this again. Thanks for joining us today. This is Larry Mente in for Geraldo Rivera on 77 WABC. Curtis and Kubi are up next.